what we're doing today is maybe number one, or close to number one, of 1,008 of such functions in North America this year. This is just like a little sharing with you. Just before coming here to St. Louis, the North American GBCs and temple presidents, U.S. and Canada, came together, and we had a nice gathering, nice meeting. And one of the things that we did was we celebrated something that would be very pleasing to our founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, that in the year 2013, that collectively the temples in U.S. and Canada distributed more books than ever in ISKCON's recorded history from U.S. and Canada. Even during Prabhupada's time, when there was so much encouragement from him to distribute many, many books, in 2013, more than ever before, we set a goal and we surpassed the goal. And for 2014, we made a goal collectively, some increase from last year. And the goal going towards the 50th anniversary of the formation of ISKCON, which was July 1966, so in 2016 marks the 50th anniversary. We plan, our goal is to surpass what the whole world did in that year. You know, in the, you know, the maximum number of books distributed during that period, the maximum period of during Prabhupada's presence for the whole world. And it's reachable. And another one of the goals, this wasn't, you know, collectively, this is kind of on the side, one of our GBC and temple presidents in Seattle has this, Seattle's the home of Microsoft, or their main office. So Microsoft, technically savvy people, made a little program or whatever on, they had a Nama Yajna, and their Nama Yajna was people that came were given beads and they were shown how to use them, because many people don't know how to use them. And when they completed one round or two rounds, it meant so many names, and they turned in the beads to the person who was sitting at the computer, and they have two big screens on the computer, and they together during that Nama Yajna they chanted something like, I don't know, 100,000 names or 300,000 names or something like that, all the people during that yajna. So his idea is in Seattle alone to do that for the course of the year, different Nama Yajnas, and make a certain number. And for the 50th anniversary all over North America to chant as many names as is the gross national deficit for the United States. Something like 20 trillion names or something. Whatever that number is. As a transcendental gesture to counteract the pernicious effects of wanton living in the United States alone. So, and then another goal was 1,008 of these as sets of Srimad Bhagavatam in homes in the U.S. and Canada. You may be home number one for the year to receive Srimad Bhagavatam. And just as we did and are going to do, you know, continuing, a function where we're installing Srimad Bhagavatam in people's homes. There's many nice things to say about that, but one of the verses that was recited, I'll just read it. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the setting is There are sages who have assembled just after Krishna's departure from this world, knowing that that departure of Krishna marks the beginning of the age of Kali, the end of Dwarpa Yuga and the beginning of Kali Yuga. And they know what that means. Bad. So they're saintly people, they want to do something to counteract the effect of that influence of the age of Kali. So they decided to gather together in a sacred place, Naimisharanya, because Naimisharanya is understood to be the hub of the universe. Just like if you have an axis, there's the North Pole and the South Pole, and the Earth planet spins 23 and a half degrees tilt, but it spins on that axis, and it pokes through it. If you go to the North Pole, you won't see a stick sticking up, but it's... Similarly, the hub of the universe passes through Naimisharanya. You don't see a pole sticking up. But according to Vedic cosmology, as the universe is turning, its point of turning through the earth planet is Naimisharanya, hub of the universe. And so they went to Naimisharanya to perform their yajna, understanding that the benefit that would be derived from their yajna, just like we did yajna of a certain type here, the yajna would benefit would go throughout the whole universe. That's why they chose Naimisharanya. And when they assembled at Naimisharanya, in their midst was Suta Goswami. Suta Goswami was the son of Romaharshan Suta, who was one of the principal disciples of Vyasadeva. And Romaharshan Suta was the one who Vyasadeva entrusted all of the Puranas to. So his son Suta was very learned in all of the Puranas, hearing from his father. But more importantly, Suta was in the audience when Shukadeva Goswami first spoke Srimad Bhagavatam. So the sages are very eager to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Suta. And the first canto begins with their asking a series of questions of Suta. And the final of those questions to Suta Goswami was, now that Krishna is gone, Krishna came, he performed his pastimes, while he was on earth, everything was auspicious, everything was produced by earth in bounty. There was no want or necessity or irregularity of weather or disease. Everything was very, very, very nice. Now Krishna is gone. And now that Krishna is gone, where will religious principles take shelter? Nice question. And the answer comes two chapters later. Almost the final verse of chapter 3 of the first canto, where Suta says, in very beautiful metaphorical language, he says, just as at the time of the setting of the sun on the western horizon, on the eastern horizon may appear the moon. And in this case, the moon-like rays of Srimad Bhagavatam, just after the departure of Krishna, the Srimad Bhagavatam has appeared that is as brilliant as the sun, but as cooling as the moon, and bearing with it the manifestation of all religious principle. So where will religious principle take shelter after Krishna's departure? Sutta says, this Srimad Bhagavatam, which has appeared just after Krishna's departure. It was spoken by the son of Vyasadeva, Shukadeva Goswami. I was told there's some people that, from Western background at least, don't know all these names. It's like confusing to hear all these names. But most of you are, you know what these names are. At least you have an idea. So Vyasadeva's son, Shukadeva, he spoke Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit, and in that speaking of Srimad Bhagavatam, all religious principles are protected because, according to Padma Purana, this Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of Krishna. In fact, Padma Purana says that just as the transcendental body of Krishna has his different limbs, so similarly the different cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam are the different parts of the body, literary body of the personality of Godhead Krishna. The first two cantos are his two lotus feet, and the next two cantos are his thighs, and so forth. The different bodily parts are described, up to the smiling face, the tenth canto, and his beautiful eyes and his broad forehead. The form of Krishna in his spiritual sorup, his spiritual form, is manifested in a sound vibration manner in this Srimad Bhagavatam. And I thought I would... I was thinking of so many things, how to spend this time, but one way is to read one verse and a short part of the purport where Vyasadeva is being instructed by Narada Muni to compile it. Because Vyasadeva heard it from Narada, he understood it, but he had previously compiled, as probably most of you know, if not all of you know, Vyasadeva wrote down the Vedas. When Krishna left, again that marked the end of Dwarpa Yuga and the beginning of Kali Yuga. And one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga is people's memory is shorter. We easily forget things. And so one way to help people who easily forget things is to write them down. Prabhupada explained like that. You know, if you want to make sure you don't forget something, write it down. You know, if you have to do something, oh, I have to do something. I was supposed to send Lal Gopal some information, and I didn't write it down, so I forgot. But then in the car ride out here, I was remembering, oh, I have to, but I didn't write it down yet. But if I know, I have a little place and I write it down and I do it. Because then it reminds me, oh, I have to do it. Of course, many of you have your little electronic devices. You don't need to write things down. You just input it in your electronic device and it reminds you got to do it. But like that, writing, Vyasadeva wrote that which was already existing. He didn't create the Vedas. They were existing in sound. In fact, there was one Veda. And to make it easier, he divided the one into divisions of four, with their philosophical content in the Upanishad section indicating what the different rituals, like we just did, were indicating, the philosophical meaning behind the ritual within. So, and then he further wrote commentary on what those are in the Smritis. And then he summarized them all in the Vedanta Sutra. And he wrote different histories like Mahabharata. He did all this fantastic work. And at the end of all that fantastic work, like somebody that does something, you know, whoever prepared the meal, the prasadam for this evening, you wonder how people are going to like it. Yes? Cooks? Or maybe for school you do a writing project. You spend a lot of time studying and you do a lot of research. You gather your notes and you write a paper. And at the end of writing the paper, you step back and you want to, how did it come out? Or an artist is painting a painting and they spend a lot of time and then at the end they step back and how did it come out? Like that. Vyasadeva did the same. With all of his work for the Vedas, he stepped back from it and looked and contemplated, how did it come out? And you know what he felt? He felt a pinch in his heart. That there's something missing. He felt an insufficiency. We all know what that feeling is. We have different ways that we feel it, but we all know that something's missing. Something's not right. And he was puzzled by that feeling. And he wanted to ask his spiritual master, Narada, why? Narada has an uncanny ability, that is, he's so intimately connected with Supersoul, the Lord of the Heart. He immediately appeared right at Vyasadeva's ashram. And a little discussion ensued as to why. It's a beautiful dialogue, but the reason why, Narada said to Vyas, is you've given inordinate emphasis upon living entities who are embodied finding religious ways to fulfill their material desire. And all of what you've written is true. They are religious ways for fulfilling material desire. So, you don't get an F, but you don't get an A either. He didn't say it like that, fine. Because the tendency of conditioned souls already is very strong for becoming involved in pursuing material enjoyment. So what you've written has simply encouraged them in the matter of pursuing material enjoyment religiously. So insufficiently have you described the purpose behind all of that. What is the ultimate goal of all the Vedas? What is the message and purpose of Vedas? No. Vyasadeva does mention it in Bhagavad Gita, for example. Vedaishta sayar vair aham eva vedyo. Vedantakrit veda vedeva chaham. Explicitly, Krishna says, the purpose of all the Vedas is to know me. But you haven't emphasized that sufficiently. So, he gave him two instructions. One, fix your mind in transcendence, in its state of complete samadhi. Fix your mind in transcendence, and you'll receive some realization. The second instruction, then compose a literature that's just that. Just that, nothing else but that. So one of the verses that Lal Gopal was reciting was one that says just that. Dharma prajita kaitavotra paramo nirmat saranam satam vedyam vastavam atravastu shivadam tapatrayon mulanam. This Srimad Bhagavatam is a literature that doesn't address how to advance in material prosperity. If that's what you're interested in, there are other literatures. You don't need to read further. We're not even going to talk about it in this literature. We're going to speak about Paradharma, the supreme dharma, the transcendental occupation of the soul. Because when spiritual well-being is attained, material well-being follows. Like a shadow follows the object that casts the shadow. We all have that experience. So rather than being shadow adjusters, the Bhagavatam is training us to be spiritual well-being attainers, specifically. And he then, Narada, instructs Vyas, a very nice verse about the character or the quality of such literature that he wanted him to compose. And it's such a nice verse that Prabhupada placed it in his preface. Because when Prabhupada was writing the preface of Srimad Bhagavatam, he was in India, and English was his second language. It wasn't his first language. And, you know, when you're writing something that's not in your first language, you may feel it may not be so perfect, so polished, and so expertly composed. So Prabhupada referred to this verse where Narada says to Vyas the same thing. Don't worry, Vyas. The essence is not how nicely it's composed. The essence is its message of transcendence. The verse is Tadvag Pasargo Janata Agha Viplavo Yasmin Pratishlokim Abhad Yavat Svapi Namanyantasha Yashon Kataniyat Shinvanti Gayanti Grananti Sadavaha. Very nice verse. And I want to read a little bit from the purport of the verse, but here's the translation. Right in the preface of this entire, every volume has this. Every one. So, the translation reads, on the other hand, that literature which is full of descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, form, and pastimes of the unlimited Supreme Lord, is a transcendental creation meant for bringing about a revolution in the impious life of a misdirected civilization. Such transcendental literature, even though irregularly composed, is heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. Very nice. So even if the precision of expression may be a little less than perfect, that's okay. If the essence is presented very nicely, this is Narada speaking to Vyas, but it's also Prabhupada speaking to his readers, so a family that just received Srimad Bhagavatam. He wanted his editors to edit very carefully and see if there's like a little grammatical or something. But even if something is there, what's most important is the all good transcendental messages of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as we were hearing, discussing on Sunday, the imminent, He from whom everything comes, Samam Bonam in Sanskrit, the absolute truth, Param Satyam Dimahi, the Supreme Absolute Truth, and His activities, and His form, and His qualities, and His name, and all of this transcendentally potent message, when heard, Janata Agha Viplava. Agha means sins. It even sounds bad. Agha. Janata Agha is the sins of people in general. Viplava is like, that's Viplava, an explosion. Prabhupada has rendered it as a revolution in the impious lives of people in the world. This Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to bring a revolution, spiritual revolution, not the other kind. A spiritual transformation, if you like. That's like a milder word. But the word is Viplava. It's spiritual revolution in the impious lives of people of the age of Kali. That's what this Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for. So it's meant for persons that are down here, like the Janata Agha personalities, very sinful persons of this age of Kali, victims of the age of Kali, just because the atmosphere is so polluted, just live in a polluted atmosphere, it's real easy to get polluted. So to change that toxic, polluting effect for sincere persons, those who are thoroughly honest, is the translation here, is at least those who wish for purity, even where it's difficult to find anything that's pure, the Srimad Bhagavatam is that shelter. It provides that. So I'd like to read just a little bit from a very long purport. So you like to find the verse. It's 1.5.11, but you'll find it in the preface of each one of these volumes. After the translation, Remember, this is Narada speaking to Vyasa, explaining what he wanted him to do after having compiled all of the Vedas. He wanted to write in exclusively one kind of literature that doesn't tell people how to be religious, pious enjoyers of the world, but how to reach transcendence and overcome all of the adverse influences of this age of Kali. Just a little bit of Prabhupada's purport. It is a qualification of the great thinkers to pick up the best even from the worst. It is said that an intelligent man should pick up nectar from a stock of poison, should accept gold even from a filthy place, should accept a good and qualified wife even from an obscure family, and should accept a good lesson even from a man or from a teacher who comes from the untouchables. These are some of the ethical instructions for everyone in every place without exception. It's a Chanakya Pandit statement. He's just paraphrasing here. But a saint is far above the level of an ordinary man. He is always absorbed in glorifying the Supreme Lord because by broadcasting the holy name and fame of the Supreme Lord, the polluted atmosphere of the world will change. And as a result of propagating the transcendental literatures like Srimad Bhagavatam, people will become sane in their transactions. Then he goes into a contemporary commentary of a quarrel between India and China that was happening at the time he was writing this, while he was still in India. So still in the early 60s, mid-60s. While preparing this commentary on this particular stanza of Srimad Bhagavatam, we have a crisis before us. Our neighboring friend, China, has attacked the border of India with a militaristic spirit. We have practically no business in the political field, yet we see that previously there were both China and India, and they lived peacefully for centuries without ill feeling. The reason is that they lived those days in an atmosphere of God consciousness, and every country over the surface of the world was God fearing, pure hearted and simple, and there was no question of political diplomacy. There is no cause of quarrel between the two countries, China and India, over land which is not very suitable for habitation, and certainly not a cause for fighting on this issue. But due to the age of quarrel, Kali, which we have discussed, there is always a chance of quarrel on slight provocation. This is due not to the issue in question, but to the polluted atmosphere of this age. Then, colon. Systematically, there is a propaganda by a section of people, in italics, to stop glorification of the name and fame of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, there is a great need for disseminating the message of Srimad Bhagavatam all over the world. It is the duty of every responsible Indian. See some people from India here. He's now paraphrasing a statement by Chaitanya. Brahmanda, from Lord Chaitanya, those who have taken their birth in the sacred land of India should, what he's going to say here. Every responsible Indian, it is the duty of every responsible Indian to broadcast the transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam throughout the world. To do all the supermost good, as well as to bring about the desired peace in the world. Because India has failed in her duty by neglecting this responsible work, there is so much quarrel and trouble all over the world. We are confident that if the transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam is received only by the leading men of the world, certainly there will be a change of heart, and naturally the people in general will follow them. The mass of people in general are tools in the hands of the modern politicians and leaders of the people. if there is a change of heart in the leaders only, certainly there will be a radical change in the atmosphere of the world. We know that our honest attempt to present this great literature, conveying transcendental messages for reviving the God consciousness of the people in general, and re-spiritualizing the world atmosphere, is fraught with many difficulties. That he apologizes for his inadequate language. Our presenting this matter in adequate language, especially in a foreign language, will certainly fail. And there will be so many literary discrepancies despite our honest attempt to present it in a proper way. But we are sure that with all our faults in this connection, the seriousness of the subject matter will be taken into consideration, and the leaders of society will still accept this due to its being an honest attempt to glorify the Almighty God. It gives an example, metaphor. When there's a fire in the house, the inmates of the house get out to get help from the neighbors, who may be foreigners, yet without knowing the language, the victims of the fire express themselves. And the neighbors understand the need, even though not expressed in the same language. The same spirit of cooperation is needed to broadcast this transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam throughout the polluted atmosphere of the world. After all, it is a technical science of spiritual values, and thus we are concerned with the techniques and not with the language. If the techniques of this great literature are understood by the people of the world, there will be success. And the purport goes on, and I'm not going to read. So, further. So, when you invite a guest, just as you've invited us to come build a fire in your living room and throw things on the floor, things like that. So, when you receive a guest in your home, it's a cultured person will honor the guest and speak nice words, and the custom is there. Prabhupada taught us, when a guest comes to your home, these simple things: a place to sit, some kind words, and some refreshment, some water or something. Simple. Any poor person can do those things. So minimally those things are to be done. What to speak if you invite the Supreme Lord to your home? So that's what you've done. Here he is, in his literary form. And so we're honoring his presence in this literary form by the yajna of auspicious mantras and ghee and grain and the wonderful prayers, the Brahma Samhita prayers that we all chanted together. Glorification of Govinda by Lord Brahma, in various slokas, the meanings of which are presented in these literatures also, and the chanting of the holy name of Krishna. So there are verses not just in the Srimad Bhagavatam that speak of the importance of Srimad Bhagavatam. If I had some more time, I'd go into some other long... Anyway, there's some very nice references where the other Puranas speak the glories of the Srimad Bhagavatam in such glowing way. Because of being involved a little bit with academics, it's something like, supposing you're a graduate student and you have a very important burning question, and so you're given the opportunity in an assembly of the heads of all the departments of the university. You walk in the room, you don't know who's who, but you say, I have a very important question. And all the persons in the room turn to one person and say, he's the most qualified. Is that ever going to happen in academia? No way. But the Puranas do like that in relation to Srimad Bhagavatam. It's the emperor. It's the, amongst kings, it is the emperor of kings. It's the Amala Purana, the spotless, and so many nice glorifications of the very special nature of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, we're going to perform arti for Srimad Bhagavatam along with reciting some of its verses and reciting some of the purports. I think we just leased one. We spoke. And if any of the families here do not yet have Srimad Bhagavatam in your home, I invite you to receive Krishna in his literary form. It's so auspicious that the Puranas say, just by keeping Srimad Bhagavatam on your shelf and respecting, don't even take it off your shelf, just put it on your shelf and respect, it will bring auspiciousness into the home and into your life and into the family. But all, what to speak of, you take the book off the shelf and open it and read its passages. According to one of the verses that Lal Gopal recited, Nashtaprayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. It recommends that the Srimad Bhagavatam is to be heard regularly or daily. So, just as many have the practice each day reading a verse from Bhagavad Gita, you can read one verse of Srimad Bhagavatam daily. And it'll only take you 18,000 days to finish it. Maybe some of the ones that are shorter, you can read a few of them at a time. But in our temples, we read a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam every morning. Or, like we just did yesterday morning, a few verses in a row because they're all on the same subject, like that. And it has a spiritualizing effect. Just as that verse by Narada says, the tendency, not only the reactions of sins, but even tendency for going away from fidelity with the Supreme is removed by this wonderful literature. One's life becomes sanctified. So just by having it in your home, I'm very happy you now have Srimad Bhagavatam in your home. And others can also. And then read it and benefit from it on a regular basis. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. The Bhagavata word means in relation to Bhagavat, Bhagavan. Bhagavata is the book Bhagavata and the person Bhagavata. And these two, service unto the person, like Vyas who compiled it, or Shukadev who spoke it, or those who repeat the message that Shukadev Goswami spoke, like Sutta, simply repeated the message he heard from Shukadev. And he's honored by the sages of Naimishra. They themselves are great sages, but they're honoring him because he heard from Shukadev. And like that, that's Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, hearing the message and the persons whose lives are simply living that message. The perambulatory Bhagavat. The person Bhagavat and the book Bhagavat. Regularly that uplifts one's consciousness, restores the dormant Krishna consciousness within the heart. And one's life then becomes filled with service to the Supreme, loving service to the Supreme. Very natural process. So, let's perform arti for Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay? Someone can do the kirtan and I'll do the arti. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.